Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Want to get a chiseled look in the jawline? Sculpt and shape your jawline with added volume from Juvederm Volux XC. Juvederm Volux XC is an injectable gel specifically designed to be robust enough to improve moderate to severe loss of jawline definition. And it is the first and only hyaluronic acid filler approved for the jawline. Add volume to your jawline for a chiseled look with Juvederm Volux XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you. Visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com.
Watch out, people. This is a hostage situation.
Oh, let me go.
I'm going to get people to subscribe to my Patreon at patreon.com/MatthewDonald. Or damn it, this old lady gets it.
Please don't hurt me. I've been a widow since 1947. I would love to see my great-granddaughter graduate college.
Quiet, you.
Oh, no.
At patreon.com/MatthewDonald, you can find bonus content for both my shows, The Ritwit and Paleobites. For the Paleobites bonus content, we discuss pop culture featuring prehistoric animals. And this month, we're talking about the classic 90s sitcom Friends.
Oh, I love that show. The ladies and I watch that every Tuesday night before bingo.
Quiet, you old bag!
Oh, no.
Now, I bet you're wondering, what the hell does that have to do with paleontology? There's no dinosaurs in that. You forget, though, that Ross, one of the six lead characters and probably the lead character, although none of them are lead characters in the technical sense, as it's an ensemble.
Yes, it is.
Shut up!
Oh.
But he is a paleontologist, and there are quite a few episodes that have to deal with his paleontological work. I mean, you know, he doesn't go on a dig or anything, but he and Rachel first sleep together in the Homo habilis exhibit. So how much more paleontological can he get, honestly? Going at it like animals, like their Homo habilis ancestors. Link is in the description. Thank you for support. Have a good day. Except for you, you old lady. Because if you don't subscribe to my Patreon, this old lady will get it, I swear to God.
Oh, I've broken free from my confines. I'm going to whack you with my handbag. You've been a bad boy. Your mother would be very disappointed in you. Subscribe to my Patreon.
Roar. Growl. Snarl. Bellow.
Welcome to Paleobites, the podcast more insulting to the natural sciences than the movie The Core. My name's Matthew Donald, and each week, I and a rotating series of guest co-hosts talk about and rate a genus of prehistoric animal, be it dinosaur, mammal, arthropod, and so on. This week, I'm joined by someone who's taken a bit of a break from the main Paleobites feed, but has recorded plenty of stuff for the Patreon for me. It's Ben O'Regan.
Hey, everyone.
Hello. Hello. Have you seen The Core?
Yes. I actually don't mind the movie, but you're right. The science behind it is absolutely terrible.
Oh, no. I love the movie. Like, it's so self-aware, but it is, yeah, like, it is... It's fun, but it's
and
like...
It's also one of those movies, like, you know how it the way it depicts the US military in it with using that harp-like weapon of theirs, whatever it's called, that causes the magnetic sphere collapse, or the whatever they're trying to fix?
Yeah, yeah, something like that,
Actually see them being stupid enough to do that during the 90s.
Oh, absolutely. It's like, oh, we figured they'd have a weapon, so we built it first, and then... We made the core stop. Oh, but it's great, though. The movie's basically just Armageddon, but down. But I like it, though. Yeah. So, anyways. Hmm. In fact, I think I heard, like, there was plans for it to be even more overt. And, like, rather than, like, being in a crystal geode, like, in the mantle, there'd be, like, a little thing of dinosaurs in it as an homage to Journey to the Center of the Earth.
That would have been cool.
But that would have been cool, but I guess they can see, like... Yeah. No, I don't know. Some people might feel like that's too far, but it's already pretty far. At least if he had done that, it would have been. It would have shown audiences, okay, this is meant to be ridiculous. Like, yeah. Even though it kind of.
It's a fun movie, but whereas it knows it's BS, whereas Armageddon, while it was still cheesy and corny as hell, it was trying to be serious within its limits.
Like Armageddon does like go hard on some emotions, and it's like, yeah, it's a bit silly, but and I also like Armageddon, but
Armageddon's I love also Armageddon. Really long.
Yeah, it's really long though, but yeah. Okay, yeah. Let's see. Speaking of asteroids, here's a dinosaur related question, albeit only sort of related, I guess. So the Chicxulub asteroid is gonna come hit the Earth. Exactly the same place, exactly the same size. It's a twin of the asteroid. It's coming. And it's gonna hit. Efforts to stop it have failed. What do you do to survive?
I don't know. Hope that Doctor Who shows up with a giant celestial cricket bat and bats it away.
Cause, like, I don't know, I think humanity could survive. Cause, I mean, a lot of it would die. But, I don't know, there might be some people in bunkers.
Yeah, I mean, some of the bunkers are probably going to get affected by tectonic issues caused by the shockwaves, but we probably could survive.
Yeah, like, especially you in New Zealand. Mike, this is double, so it lands in the Yucatan. So me, up here in Colorado, I'm dead. But you in New Zealand, your house might still stand. It's just, there'd be a lot of wildfires where you are.
And then it's the asteroid winter.
Yeah, exactly, and then that could last for years, so you've got to stock up on supplies.
Hmm.
So,
well, the good thing about something like that is we'd know, even if we don't have time to actually prepare, you'd have time to set your affairs in order, and a bit like that Keira Knightley film, End of the World.
Oh, Seeking a Friend for the End of the World. Yeah, Steve Carell will never do better than Keira Knightley. Like,
yeah. I kind of wasn't paying attention to the film, but I got the overall gist of it.
Yeah, it's like, oh, he's seeking a childhood friend that he kind of had a crush on. You know, the world's going to end, yeah. Also, have you ever seen the movie, what is it called? It's with Gerard Butler. It came
Greenland?
Out, Greenland, yeah.
Not yet.
Because that movie kind of has a similar premise. It's like an asteroid pretty much the same size as the one that Wipe of the Dinosaurs is coming, and there's no effort in the movie whatsoever put to stop it. It's just to survive it.
Mm.
Like... And so
it sounds like a way more grounded 2012, essentially.
Yeah, exactly. So
I mean, granted,
like, yeah, 2012
is a guilty pleasure of mine, but I like.
Oh, I love
those.
2012 too. Like, I love all these disaster movies. You know, Moonfall that just came out. I want to go see that. Like, all right. So speaking of none of that, we're talking about a controversial fossil. This was your suggestion, and I wasn't sure if I really wanted to do it because it was so controversial. But I thought it'd be kind of fun to do.
That was the whole reason I picked it, because it's controversial, and it's also something I learned about back when there wasn't the controversy over it on one of my first dinosaur books, which was one about Stegosaurus, and I would mention Dravidosaurus was the last Stegosaurus, and it survived because India was an island at the time or something.
Right, I remember reading that too. But yeah, so it's Dravidosaurus, or Lizard of the Dravidnadu region.
Which is the southern part of India where the Tamils and all that come from, if I know correctly.
Right, that makes sense. I'm assuming in terms of, like, other creatures in that formation, that's probably where Rajasaurus is from. Yeah, I don't know. I need to look that up.
The Ablosaurids.
Yeah, exactly. Type, definitively, we know it's a reptile. That's for dang certain. It's
whether it's
debated...
a plesiosaur or a stegosaur or something else
Yeah, it's currently debated whether or not it's a stegosaurus or a plesiosaur, two completely different animals. So watch as it's revealed to actually be a snake or something. So size, 10 feet/3 meters long is what we think from the limited bones we have. Which, if that were a stegosaur, would make it the smallest of its group. But if it were a plesiosaur, that's more on the average side. So.
Yeah, because most plesiosaurs weren't actually the big long-necked giants that you see in movies.
Elasmosaurus is like the one exception, and even then it's like not even that big. It's like 40 feet long. It's not like a long neck, but in the sea, you know.
Mm.
But
especially since they're not herbivores or filter feeders, they seem to be using their necks to catch fish.
Right,
so if they're
exactly.
overly long, that causes drag issues when they're swimming and stuff.
Exactly. Speaking of which, diet, herbivore if it was a stegosaur, carnivore if it was a plesiosaur.
To be more technical, piscivore.
Right, exactly. I just realized I'm describing this thing as if like it were a stance switcher in an RPG or a MOBA game.
Well, to be fair, there's very little to go on with it.
Yeah, exactly. We do know there is some more definitive stuff, though. Time, late Cretaceous, 90 to 84 million years ago. Location, India. described in 1979 pop culture appearances until we can figure out for certain what the hell this thing is. I doubt anything's going to try and feature this thing. So.
But if it was a Stegosaurus I'm leaning towards, then it was definitely a very, very late surviving one, because there was a big gap between its date and when they died out, supposedly in the early Cretaceous. Which
exactly.
means there has
so,
to have been a very long ghost lineage somewhere.
Exactly. Like, that's the thing with the study of paleontology that's frustratingly apparent with each new discovery. We don't know shit. Like, remains of anything are usually quite fragmentary, meaning scientists have to piece together the puzzles that often have pieces missing or broken or bent or other stuff that overall just makes the experience that much harder.
Exactly. Like, and then you've got the problem, like, when you're looking for things like missing links and stuff or transitional fossils. They actually become hard to find, and then you get into the whole, well, people claim, where's the evidence?
You know?
Like, absence of evidence is not evidence of absence. It's the fossil record is
so spotty.
Pretty spotty, like, that you're probably never going to find half what you're looking for.
Exactly. The majority of dinosaurs we will never know about because they will have never fossilized, and that always makes me sad. But,
like, we'll probably have the majority of groups and stuff just because of the sheer amount of remains being found, but yeah, there's going to be a lot of animals we've never found evidence of.
But still, the higher-ups, the paleontology CEOs, if you will, demand papers presenting the research. So whatever the paleontologists got, they have to write a paper on it. Them's the rules. So in 1979, after paleontologists P.M. Yagdagiri and Krishnan Ayasamy discovered badly weathered remains consisting of a partial skull, a tooth, a sacrum, an ilium, an ischium, a dermal plate, and a spike, they were like, look at this mess. We gotta make something out of it. Plates? Spikes? That's a stegosaur, right? So,
well, it makes sense. I mean, spikes and plates, what else could it be? If it was spikes and scutes, I'd say, like, Ankylosaurus or something similar, like an Odosaur. But what other dinosaur has blimmin' plates?
I know, exactly. I mean, it could... Okay, look, to play devil's advocate, because the devil doesn't have enough advocates, maybe it's like some sort of hardened scale? I don't know, like crocodile sort of thing? I don't know.
True, I'm not saying that it's a criticism, I'm just meaning if it's a genuine plate, no other non-dinosaur group has them, not even other Phyroporians.
Right, exactly, but if it's like so weathered, we don't know if it's a plate is a thing, so...
True, there is that, because fossils can be distorted as hell.
Exactly. So, like, if this was a stegosaur, this makes Dravidosaurus the latest known stegosaur in the family's history, beating out the definitively last species, Mongolostegus, guess where that's from?
Mongolia.
By nearly 15 million years. It seems that the decline of the stegosaur family in the Cretaceous was caused by the increasing dominance of angiosperms, or flowering plants, as the family's decline coincides directly with that of the decline of the cycads. So,
which makes sense. Their teeth probably wouldn't have been as well adapted to like conifers and flowering plants and stuff.
Exactly. Still, that doesn't mean they would have necessarily gone away completely. Some of them could have adapted to feed on the new plants or stuck around wherever cycads still remained. As those plants are still alive today, albeit very much on the decline.
Yeah, so it probably wasn't any one factor, but a combination. Change in the flora and fauna, like the floral composition to stuff that they had to adapt to eat, and then animals that were better and more efficient at just demolishing everything in their path, like hadrosaurs or the iguanodonts, their predecessors, technically.
Exactly,
you know, just, just
cause, like, the ones...
evolution. It's a pain in the ass. Groups lose all the time.
Exactly. Well, that's the thing. And, like, well, especially like the iguanodons and the other kind of hadrosaurs, those were like the first dinosaurs that specifically evolved chewing. And that would have increased the amount of plants they could have eaten. So,
well, yeah, they could have just blitzed through everything.
Yeah, exactly. Stegosaurs, as far as we know, could not chew. So, like, they relied on soft plants to feed.
Yeah, because they just kind of bit and soared through it, from my understanding.
However, not content with this classification of Dravidosaurus, paleontologist Sankar Chatterjee visited the site in 1991, the year of our birth, and claimed that this genus was actually based on the pelvic and hind-limbed elements of plesiosaurs. This new classification was not met unchallenged, as paleontologists Peter M. Galton and Paul Upchurch, who I think, based on the name Upchurch, I think I've mentioned that name on the show before. I don't know, he must be a famous paleontologist.
Sounds familiar.
Yeah, argued that the skull, tooth, and plate bones of Dravidosaurus certainly didn't match that of plesiosaurs. I mean, when was the last time you saw a plesiosaur with spikes? I mean, I guess the last source of Jurassic World Evolution 2, but
that looks like a dragon.
That's like artistic license to greater differentiate it from the plesiosaur, sort of like the
well, love it or hate it, it's kind of hard to make some animals look distinct beyond size.
Exactly. So, still, as of right now, the remains are technically classified as plesiosaur, so Chatterjee must have had some pretty good evidence for it, yet the battle continues. Galton and Ayasami, Ayasami's been at this for a while, because they said to reaffirm the stegosaurian classification of Dravidosaurus in 2017. Considering Ayasami described it in 1979, this has been a 30-plus-year, almost 40-plus-year battle for him. Like... So
it sounds almost a bit like, granted I know virtually nothing about any of these guys we mentioned, but I like the rivalry that's been going on between, is it Horner and Robert Baker or Barker or whatever,
yeah.
Which
Robert
accumulated
Barker, yeah.
In him getting a character of him in Jurassic Park.
Lost World.
Yeah, the guy that gets eaten by the T-Rex after the snake shows up.
Exactly.
And then his whole comment, he was such a good sport about it though,
I forget the guy's name.
He's like, see, I told you it was a hunter.
Exactly. No, I don't know, like Jack Horner has been the paleontologist consultant on the Jurassic Park movies, which I find odd, because not only do those movies show T-Rex as a predator, an active predator, but they also have Stiggy Moloch in Fallen Kingdom, so...
Well, I think they stopped using it, like, treating him as, like, his word as gossip after the backlash at JP3.
I guess that makes sense, because, it was his idea to have the Spinosaurus be a giant super predator, right, that killed the T-Rex.
And I think Spielberg wanted to change it up, but because apparently I think it was from Clayton Fioretti's channel or another one of those channels on YouTube that covers it.
I love that channel.
Mentioned that there was a bit of a backlash against there being two T-Rexes. Apparently people felt that it diminished its presence, and I'm like, what?
Yeah, well, I kind of like that. Like, it's just, like, upping the stakes. Now, obviously, there's a limit.
Yeah, I found two T-Rexes blimmin' terrifying.
Like, I definitely think there's a...
you see Eddie Carr just before he gets eaten. I mean, yeah, he's not able to get his gun. Not that I wouldn't have wanted the Rexes killed anyway, but it's like...
Yeah, just...
That's nightmare fuel stuff, seeing them bash through and get him and then rip him in two.
Exactly. No, I love that. Doing that classic Lady and the Tramp style thing, but with a human instead of a spaghetti. Like, I agree. Like, yeah, I think that's silly. It's upping the stakes. Now, granted, there is a limit. Like, if they'd done, like, 50 T-Rexes, obviously that's too much.
Sounds a bit like one of the plans they originally had for Alien 3 back before the one that everyone knows and not everyone likes came out.
One of the plans
was to have a bunch of, like, alien queens being fought by people on power loaders, and I'm just like, yeah, that's ridiculous.
That's too far. That goes against the whole horror movie aesthetic of the first one. Now, I get, like the first one was a horror movie, the second one was more of an action movie, because they had multiple xenomorphs.
And it was still terrifying in its own way, though, especially the cutting the power thing. So, like, how did they even know to do that?
Exactly, so... Anyway, so to get back to, Dravidosaurus, this has been a battle going on a long time for Ayasami, and to this day, studies are still being made to trying to figure out what the hell this thing was. So let's vote, shall we? Was Dravidosaurus a stegosaur or a plesiosaur? Let us know in the comments. Please leave comments.
And obviously, you know my position, I'm convinced it's a stegosaur for now.
I am inclined to agree, but I feel like, just to mix it up, I should say it's a plesiosaur, but I don't. I don't think it's a plesiosaur. I think it's a stegosaur. And now, granted, some of that is... personal bias, like, I love the idea of a late Cretaceous stegosaur, but two, it's also because, like, the plates and spikes, like, you'd have to really work around, like, how
is
that
some kind of crocodilian. I mean, we know, there were some crocodiles that converged on dinosaurs, or crocodilomorphs, like Poposaurus or whatever, from, if I'm pronouncing it right, from the Triassic, we thought it was an ornithomimid.
Right, like, the Poposaurus is crazy looking. That is basically a dinosaur, but it's a crocodile, crocodilian.
Yeah, so maybe there was a bit like, maybe there was some crocodilian offshoot, like, not a true croc, but like some of the various groups that existed before, back then, that converged, like, on stegosaurs, a bit like Atiosaurs converged on Ankylosaurs before Ankylosaurs were a thing.
Exactly. Oh, that drives me crazy. And when dinosaurs run America, that he calls it Damastasuchus rather than Desmatasuchus.
I didn't even know it was pronounced that way, but good to know.
Yeah, Desmatasuchus as well. He does that throughout the whole... He says Anatotitan rather than Anatotitan, that doesn't really matter anymore because it's Edmontosaurus anyways.
It was just a very big specimen, wasn't it?
Yeah, exactly. So, I mentioned this on the podcast before, speaking of big hadrosaurs, and this is a bit of a tangent, but there's not really much to say about Dravidosaurus, so I think I might leave this in. We'll see how it goes.
Leave it in, dude.
Have you heard of Hypsibema?
No, I haven't.
It is... very scantily remains, because you know how the Western Interior Seaway divided North America into two subcontinents, Laramidia and Appalachia?
Yeah.
So almost all of our fossils come from Laramidia, because all the sediments and other stuff there, it works really well there.
Yeah, Appalachia is the West Coast, basically.
Yeah, but Appalachia, the East Coast, basically barren. Like, not that there wasn't anything there. It was just
like the dryosaurs come from there.
Yeah, exactly. Like the fossils,
or whatever you call them.
Yeah, like fossils there are really hard to find. They do still find a few, but like most, it's like the something about the rock and like the way it erodes and like the formations. Somehow, it's really hard for fossils to stay there. But there is evidence of a hadrosaur from Appalachia that's currently called Hypsibema that, if estimates are to be believed, it could have rivaled Shantungosaurus in size.
It also says it could be a small sauropod, though.
Yeah, I guess it's true. Like, but I like to imagine like being a big super hadrosaur, or like those pseudo-sauropods from Spec. Like,
I can believe it. I mean, because, like I said, granted, this is me from a bit of me reading too much of that Serena World of Birds project, but one of the animals in that, called a fawn grazer, or is an omniphage, just like they're loosely based on hadrosaurs by the word of Dylan Barger, who creates it. So they're supposed to be like everything eaters. So if that's true, a bit probably with some exaggeration, hadrosaurs just being such destructive eating machines probably means they could get the sauropod size and fill that ecological niche quite easily without needing any specializations like long necks and stuff.
Exactly, exactly.
Like just bash the tree down and eat it.
Exactly.
That probably actually explains why there's such low species diversity amongst them around the end of the Cretaceous. I mean, obviously we've got lots of species, like you got Parasaurolophus, Corypheosaurus, Edmondosaurus, and so on and so forth. But never heaps of them at the same time. Heaps of them across time, so...
Exactly. So it's just like I guess the point of all this, and to bring this back to Dravidosaurus too, is like there's so much we don't know, and it'll be and like more and more. I wish for us to get a time machine, maybe not a time machine, but like a time observer where we could just somehow look back in time, just so we can study more, because there's so much we're missing from the evidence we have here.
Mind you, if we had a time machine, that necessarily wouldn't be a bad thing. I mean, depending on one's view of paradox and stuff, I've always taken the view that going back in time splits the timeline, like Divergent Universes type thing.
Sort of like Avengers Endgame, like where Nebula can shoot her older self and not die.
Or, as I often explain it, the Red Alert view of things. Einstein goes back in time and tries to remove Evil Mustache Man. Comes back home, nothing's changed, but there's also a timeline created by his meddling where Stalin starts World War II rather than Hitler.
Right, exactly. So yeah, bring on the time machine. So I don't know. I'm
not gonna lie, I wouldn't mind the opportunity to hunt a Tyrannosaurus.
Right. Well, and plus, like, I'm just gonna be sad because, like, eventually we're gonna run out of fossils, and I know we can always study like the fossils we have, but eventually, like, hundreds and hundreds of years from now, when we run out of fossils, like, our interest in dinosaurs will wane because there'll just be no more to learn from the evidence we have. Yeah. And then dinosaurs might just fade into obscurity, because one of the things that keeps dinosaurs so in the mainstream and so interesting to people is that we're always learning something new about them. So,
true.
And then once,
I think there will always be people who like them, but they'll become very niche once again rather than
like,
the mass media.
Yeah, like I've heard that we're not going to run out until like the 2300s. Like, we still got a couple hundred years left.
Yeah,
based on evidence. And that could also change as it goes on. Like, we could increase our fossils finding. Like, maybe there's fossils down in the bottom of the ocean that we just can't get to now, but future paleontologists might be able to. So,
well, Antarctica's a gold mine, and we can't exactly get to it until it starts melting. That'll we start burning through it.
Yeah, exactly. It could last for a while, but the point is, eventually we'll have run the well dry on fossils. And then the only new evidence will be what we've studied from what we've got, so...
True.
And that'll be a sad day, but thankfully we'll be long dead by that time that happens.
Unless there's dramatic life extension technology, which I kind of hope for, because I want to live a very long time.
I don't know. Only if everyone else was. I don't want to be alive when everyone else I know is dead.
No, I can definitely understand those arguments. It's just there's a lot of things I want to do.
Yeah, my friend who's a big Trekkie, he wants to get to like 22 something because he's like, that's when warp travel's invented. So,
God, Star Trek.
Lawrence, if you listen to the episodes with Lawrence, Mac, he's the Trekkie fan.
I might need to teleport over there and have a word to him.
Exactly. Alright, so...
What accent was that I just did?
I have no idea. Alright, so let's rate Dravidosaurus 1 out of 65 million. I feel like this deserves two ratings. Well, because one, if it's a plesiosaur, one, if it's a stegosaur, or maybe not, I don't know. Like, because you definitively think it's a stegosaur.
So. I'll go first, and if it's a stegosaurus, I'm going to be unoriginal and give it 65 million, because it's pretty impressive it made it that far, if it really is the last one, assuming that there aren't ones that are found even later than it.
Well, I mean, like, the World of Skull Island book has a surviving stegosaur in it, which seems to imply that, at least on Skull Island, some have kept living, so...
Mm. And even then, they were on their way out, even if the island hadn't been sinking, because they were subsisting on ferns, and those ferns are only found in a small area.
Right, exactly, so...
Even Skull Island doesn't give them a break.
Well, to be fair, Skull Island gives no one a break, so... But yeah, so I'm gonna give it, like... Like, if it's a stegosaur, like, 55 million, 56 million, yeah, it's not, like, an impressive stegosaur. It's very small. But, yeah, the fact that it lasted that long, that's pretty cool. If it's a plesiosaur, though, it's a tiny plesiosaur, 5 million. Although, I guess it has spikes if it's a plesiosaur. That's pretty cool, 10 million.
Yeah. If it's a plesiosaur spikes, I might give it 32.5 million.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, I think I'm going to bump it up because they have plesiosaur with spikes and plates. That sounds cool as 35 million. So, but it's probably a stegosaur. So,
it might be neither. It might be Blim and Stitch running around in time looking for experiments and he left weird fossils.
That could work. That's something they could do. Who knows?
So I just wanted to inject that in because that's like one of my favorite late Disney movies.
Yeah, I'm partial more to Atlantis, but I do like Stitch. So, all right, well, that's it for this week. If you want to get a hold of the show, you can contact us at matchd@matthewdoncreator.com. For any other questions to either co-host, if you want to follow me on social media, you can follow me at matthewdoncreator on Facebook, at matthewdon64 on Twitter, and matthewdon64 on Instagram. Let's see, I also have another podcast called The Writ Twitch, where two twits talk about writing. And finally, I have a book series on Amazon, Megazoic, available for print and Kindle. No Dravidosaurus, because I was not brave enough to definitively say, even though I could just say, in the world of Megazoic, it is a Stegosaurus. So.
Well, honestly, I don't blame you, because didn't you also, from what I remember from my skim reads, avoid Spinosaurus?
Yes. Well, when I did have Spinosaurus, I made it specifically a mutant dinosaur, made it by his
bad.
Yes,
that's what I mean.
Yeah, so, like, that way I could explain any sort of changes. Like, oh, it was a mutant! Like, and again, though, it really doesn't matter in terms of the realm of fiction. Like, I strive, of course, to make them realistic, obviously other than the fact that they talk and have laser guns. But, like, I gave them feathers, and, like, I gave them sort of more updated sort of stuff. But if I wanted to, and if I wanted to make them like 1970s-style slurposaurs with dragging tails and scaly skin and kangaroo posture, I would have 100% been justified in doing so because it is fiction. Like, some people would have to get over that.
And I should probably interject this in. People who do listen to Rip Rip, I don't do that, so don't go listening to it looking for me.
Oh, yes, of course. Yeah, you're not there. Some of my co-hosts go back and forth, but most of them don't. So, yeah.
I don't think I've even listened to it before, in all honesty.
Yeah. It's all right. Yeah. This gets way more downloads.
Because it's mostly about writing, isn't it?
Yeah, it's mostly about writing and, like, sort of stuff. I do have fun skits at the beginning, which I kind of like. All right, well, that's it for this week. As I say at the end of every episode of Paleo Bites, either splash, splash, or... I don't know.
And for our listeners, keep safe, everyone. Don't catch that damn flu.
Don't catch COVID. Bye.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Want to get a chiseled look in the jawline? Sculpt and shape your jawline with added volume from Juvederm Volux XC. Juvederm Volux XC is an injectable gel specifically designed to be robust enough to improve moderate to severe loss of jawline definition. And it is the first and only hyaluronic acid filler approved for the jawline. Add volume to your jawline for a chiseled look with Juvederm Volux XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com.
Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you. Visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to Quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.